Thank you, everyone, for listening to Thank You for Being a Podcast, the Golden Girls podcast, the podcast in which we watch an episode of the Golden Girls and we break it down scene by scene. And newly, just adjacent Golden Girls things that we have found, as you've probably clicked on and saw.
Yeah, we finished the series. We did it.
We did it.
Yeah, yeah. So this is just our victory lap.
This is us chilling the fuck out.
Yeah. And this is a gratuitous podcast.
Yeah, we did not have to
so
do this.
So if you don't like it, don't tell us.
Don't tell us.
Ever. About this or anything, really.
Or anything at all. Don't tweet at us, please. Yeah. Stop it. I'm Anthony DeSamito.
I'm Genevieve Rice.
And today I'm super excited. We're both super excited to have the awesome Tony Tripoli.
Yay!
Thank you for being new friends. Yay. I love you guys so much. Thank you for having me. This is super cool.
Thank you for being on the show.
Did you do the Golden Palace episodes?
We did.
No, I've never seen them.
I don't want to.
No, it's the drunk uncle in our family that we just want to pretend we're not related to. And no one discusses. He's in prison and that's fine.
Yeah, he did some terrible things to children. Before we get started on the episode, we like to ask our guests what is their Golden Girls background? How has Golden Girls affected your life in any way, negative or positive? So go ahead, Tony.
There can't be a negative way.
No way.
That the girls could affect. Listen, no, look, I just moved back to Phoenix from living in Los Angeles for 30 years.
Wow.
And there's an amazing group of drag performers that do actual Golden Girls live on stage. And I know a lot of cities have that now. I know they do in Boston and P-Town. New York has a group, lots of places. So
they do it here too.
Do they do it in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to
Pandora's go. Box people.
Okay.
Down at Ice House. Ice Picks Video Bar. I don't know if they still do it, but they've had Golden Girls drag queen shows.
It's great. Oh, and cool. I think it speaks a lot to Disney ABC. That they own the rights. They could shut all of those shows down with one letter from a lawyer.
Oh, for sure.
And I don't know of one city whose drag group doing it has been asked not to.
Right.
And, you know, especially in LA, right under the ABC building, they know full well.
Yeah.
Some of the writers and producers on the show have come to see it. I've been there. I've got to meet a couple of people that worked on the Golden Girls. I have a bunch of stories about behind the scenes.
I think
it's
they mean so much to the gay community.
Absolutely.
They're like, why would they? They're on your side, obviously. Like, it's like this whole thing.
I also have a 13-year-old niece here now that I moved to Phoenix.
Yes, you're telling
and
us.
And I am walking her through I'm making her watch the episodes.
Yes, it's great.
Which at first she really wasn't that into. But it really, very quickly, she was like, these bitches are savage.
That's so great.
A read is a read. A good joke is a good joke 25 years later, which it really does speak to the writing.
She really needs to watch Golden Girls before she gets into high school so she knows everything. Before.
Completely.
Yeah, she needs to be prepared.
Everything.
Yeah, she needs. Algebra and basically like that's what she needs to get through high school and life, really.
If you don't know that Chicken Little episode,
then
this date is over.
Then you're doomed. You're not gonna make it through biology.
I know that you're a married lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you're dating Anthony.
I'm dating a guy. Yeah,
long time though.
No,
but so when you were single and dating, at what point do you talk about their Golden Girls? Like, if I'm on a date and someone was like, ugh, I hate the Golden Girls, I don't know if that's recoverable.
It happens first date when I talk about the Golden Girls, because now there's Google, and if you Google me something Golden Girls,
that's true,
and they're like, oh, what Golden Girls podcast, I saw that you do, and I meet guys. The guy I'm dating now, I met through Instagram, so he can see all the Golden Girls stuff.
I just imagine someone like confronting you, about they're like print out like our like podcast cover and they're like, what's this?
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Because you're listening to this, Mike.
I could date someone that didn't really care about the Golden Girls,
right?
But you can't actively loathe the show. That's just going to be nice.
My husband actually, he never really saw it when I was kid. He didn't watch TV, and we actually had him on the podcast, and kind of midway through, he was like, wait. There weren't two Sophias? I thought they were two twins.
I'll never understand straight men. I will never understand the straight male mind.
He likes the show. He just didn't watch TV.
Why would he, like pre-Olsen twins? We had the Sophia twins. It was just two senior citizen millionaires. They had an empire of Depends and Life Alert products.
He must have like watched Golden Girls stoned in college and just fell asleep. He had this dream about them being twins.
Listen,
Something happened.
Estelle was twins. And we would still have at least one of them around.
And they would switch off during the episode and have like Mary-Kate, Estelle.
Many stories have been told about how, especially in the later seasons, you know, as her mental capacity was diminishing, they really did have to have like a handler that was treating much like having a child on set. And that B was apparently just vicious to anyone that even batted an eye at that. So protective of her.
Wow.
And I'm, and you know, have tell. Been told that that was the friction between she and Betty that is so rumored, really all sprung from Betty's frustration about Estelle and B taking that as, don't you roll your eyes at my mother.
Right.
Yeah.
She really went to bat on what we watched today, B. Arthur, for Estelle Getty. Like, she's the only one that really kept bringing her up. Let's talk about what we watched. While we're in it. So on IMBD and everything, this is technically season 7, episode 0. And it is titled The Golden Girls, Their Greatest Moments. The original air date was June 2nd, 2003.
By the way, I would literally watch a show called The Golden Girls. I would watch that. Even at this point, I'm just so desperate for some new footage.
It's just their colon.
It's just like camera. It's
angles.
Like, Rue, you're up. We'll put the camera in.
It's so easy to digest.
So this aired 11 years after the show ended, and it aired on Lifetime because that's where it was syndicated through.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was
television for women.
Well, yes. Because, you know, pre Golden Girls, Lifetime was really known as the Lifetime movies. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I believe around this time frame, the movies were not doing quite as well. Uh-huh. But then when they bought the Golden Girls reruns from mm-hmm. wherever TV Land or wherever had them, it was just major ratings, you know, rejuvenation for Lifetime. So yeah, they scrambled to put this special together, and
they really did scramble.
It's a money grab. I mean, there's no way around it. What do you think they spent on that set?
I think maybe $10.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of LED lights.
It's
a
lot of primary colors and cubes and squares.
Very like, from like a dance scene from Saved by the Bell.
It wasn't like good enough to be the America's Funniest Home Video set. Yeah. But it's sort of in that genre.
Yeah.
Nobody's giving away $10,000 on the show. Yeah.
Do you think you can do a synopsis when we watch?
I will try.
Okay. All right. Because we always did Genevieve always did the synopsis. So, I guess this had some kind of
The Golden Girls take us through their greatest moments, as the title suggests, mm-hmm. and it's a real talking heads kind of thing. They have the Golden Girls kind of come out and do the most awkward patter before the video, and they introduce clips. They introduce good moments. They kind of got everything in there. They have like favorite funny moments. They have some sad moments. They have some emotional moments. They have some lots of singing and dancing, and then they also have the Golden Girls kind of share some insight of their background, like on the show and stuff like that. And then they have kind of a true Hollywood story kind of thing, though it doesn't get into the dark part. I wanted it to get into the dark parts. I wanted a reverse, negative, and you know,
like B. Arthur hated Rose.
Although we should state for the viewer that has not watched this yet, Estelle Getty did not participate.
Yes,
yes.
All that was said is that she has retired from show business.
Right.
We now know her health was very diminished at that time.
Right.
But
there's no way.
There were a couple of moments now, looking back, you know, hindsight being 20/20 vision, where B is trying to set up an Estelle clip, and she's physically, it's difficult for her to, you know, even share the memory, and it's as if she can't remember the details But yeah. Now, after us talking about it, we're like, oh, no, she remembered. She just, it's too real that she's tossing to the scene of Estelle with the old man on the park bench who is having dementia issues. So it's that so was crazy. That one really crushed me. That moment, I really was like, oh, I'm feeling a tear.
Yeah, I felt a little teary just knowing that fact, too. That and that Bea Arthur is so emotional.
That was such an emotional episode, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we did that with Eric Bias. Do you know Eric?
That was the episode you discussed. That's, we did
the episode with him, yeah. I remember.
That's sad. Yeah, they used that pier set a few times. They were very thrifty. You notice how, like,
that pier, yeah.
they used the pier. Like, it's Miami. They'll go to the beach again. That's pretty smart.
I think filming outside for, like, a comedy, like, before, like, the 2000s was, like, very difficult and kind of corny.
Oh, yeah, you're never gonna
do
that.
Yeah, it was very hard. So we start off with Betty White introducing the show, and so we get into Sophia's intro clips and
Right off the bat, my first observation was when Betty White walks, because it's like a mini RuPaul's Drag Race runway that they're sort of on. And it was like, you know what I mean?
Sponsored by Lisa Frank.
Yeah. You know, it's like RuPaul's Drag Race Iceland or someplace like that didn't have a big budget. Not a lot of queens. It's just some old lady. But Betty White is, because this is what, 2011? Was that the year that they...
So 2003.
Yeah. So she's already in the Betty White old lady suit that we know her to be, the monochromatic, blue, very triangular shaped blazer that's very loose at the bottom because she had that Minnie Mouse body where she sort of had that sort of tummy.
Like a pants suit.
Yeah, it's a nice wide legged slack.
Yeah.
And it's in a very, you know, always a pastel or a bright color, but head to toe with the same, like, it's probably a Dickie. Under that blazer, it's not even really a blouse. That we saw Betty White to this day, that's still her look. It's like, today I'm wearing peach, and I'm going to wear the peach one. Like, she's got, like, them
she's
in
like
every
Steve
color.
Jobs. She's
God bless that woman.
Too busy.
Today might be a lavender day. Yeah. I don't know. So, it's a good look. Sometimes I think about, like, my old lady look and, like, kind of how I will go, and I'm kind of looking at, like, Eileen Fisher, and I'm like, I think I could go there. I think I could go with, like, a long, flowy, like,
that's
dress.
That's very smart.
And, like, and then, like, chunky jewelry. I'm like, I'm kind of almost there, but...
Yeah.
But someday.
Like a really understated Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm going to do, like, a tunic, a slack, a blazer, and then, like, a statement necklace to say I'm still trying, but I'm not going to... Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
I like that you're planning it now.
Like, I know what I'm going to look like when I'm an old lady. Plan ahead, people. So we start off with clips and... They're very jumpy. They're super funny. Right off the back, like, they did the best, like, clips. Because I remember us just laughing very hard at the beginning.
Again, having been, you know, a television producer.
Yeah.
The key thing is that first, that A block, you've got to maintain your viewers to that first commercial break, because those are the most expensive commercials. And then the other super important thing is the 30-minute break. You can't go to a commercial... from like 27 minutes to 32 minutes. You need to hold them with something strong so that you don't, because people channel surf on the commercials.
Right.
So you knew that first block was going to be good. And then, like, the third one is going to be good because that's getting you into the second 30-minute chunk. And then it really just diminishes.
So the second block was like, what? Huh? Why are we talking about this? What is this? This is not a great... And then it just cut... Some of the scenes just cut. They didn't know where to cut. And they cut maybe a joke too far where it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
Or maybe, like, not even... God, what was that scene where they didn't even do the good part? I forget what scene it was.
The clip packages, they make some odd choices.
Yeah, some of them were rough.
Like, you only see Chicken Little at the very, very end as a photo, like a still that flies by.
Why did they do that?
Yeah, Chicken Little. I mean, that's the money shot of the series.
And thank you.
And the money shot of the series.
Like, it's so great.
I agree.
It's the best. It's like maybe B. Arthur was like, I don't want you guys showing that. Something happened, you know. The part, I just remembered what I was talking about. The condom scene, they didn't show B. Arthur saying, condoms, right. Condoms, condoms.
Yeah. It's so strange.
You have to show that.
It's so weird. Again, I know that you're a heterosexual, Genevieve, and you get a pass. Obviously, you're an honorary member of the
Golden Girls podcast. Yes. Such a pass.
But God damn it, you cannot let a straight man edit Golden Girl Club packages. I mean, is that a hate crime that I'm saying that?
No, I agree.
You cannot let a straight man.
Thank you. I'm never gonna go edit a NASCAR package. I'll stay in my lane, but stay away from Chicken Little and Turkey
Lurkey. You'll never do the package for Sons of Anarchy.
Right, thank you.
I won't edit the man show.
Right. That would actually be an amazing thing to have a feminist group of women like do a man show greatest hits package.
Honestly, it's just a few funny moments with Jimmy Kimmel, and that's it.
That's really funny. Also, B. Arthur's look.
The black. It was amazing all black.
Because B, again, God bless her, to the very end, she was committed to that dark lip and then a black eyebrow, mm-hmm. even though every hair on her head was white to the point of being almost translucent at that point. But then she's got these giant black eyebrows on. Hilarious. And the voice is even deeper and smokier and growly.
I don't know if it was like the pixelated of the YouTube video that we didn't watch
the best quality clip.
It wasn't
clip.
The best quality clip.
Oh, I think the pixelation did her favors, I believe. I say that with no malice, only as a fan.
No, this is the only way that B. Arthur allowed this to be seen. It's through this pixel. Like, this is the original, guys. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like pixelated. They made her voice even deeper somehow.
Yeah. That's the trade-off.
She's just sitting there in the editing booth, unenhanced.
Amazing. And then Rue McClanahan, as she's doing her sound bites, and then she tries to mention something about her character, she can no longer do a Southern accent. How is that possible?
She's trying to go in and out of the character, and there's not even so near it. Weird.
She's from Oklahoma too.
It's inexcusable.
So, yeah,
but she was saying things like, the uncontrollable need for attention of man and the subject of sex.
Yeah.
And like she was just going into her character, but not
insane.
Completely devoted to it. And then coming back to Rue. And I was just like, what are you doing, lady?
I gotta say one more thing. Like, okay, none of them were appear together. Like, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, look, the easy answer is scheduling conflicts. They had no budget, and they said, listen, we've got 3 days to tape this. Can you come in any of those times?
Right.
And we'll, you know what I mean?
Giving the sensible answer.
I also think it was sort of I'll do it, but I don't want to see Rue. I'll do it, but
I don't want to see I want to see Rue, like Betty White.
Right.
B. Arthur versus Betty White, you know, like that whole thing. Yeah. I understand scheduling.
Do you know about the late night phone calls? Have you ever heard this story?
No.
One of the writers of multiple episodes who went on to become an incredibly famous television writer, producer, creator in his own right, once told me to my face at a dinner of about six people some stories about his time working on The Golden Girls when he first came to Hollywood. He's sort of a young and innocent writer. And he said that at that point, there was a lot of friction between B and Betty. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, they both were sort of sold the show on it being their big comeback return to television that was sort of the starring vehicle. Yeah. So there was always a little bit of that Laverne and Shirley. B thought she was the star, but Betty thought she... Whatever. Anyhow, so as he told the story to me, B... big drinker, we all know that. Mm-hmm. But she was really good about not drinking on Friday, which was tape day.
Right.
But the second they got wrapped, it was just that bottle of scotch got opened. And 15 minutes later, B was completely in the bag, right? Mm-hmm. So it was not uncommon for them to get late night phone calls from a drunken B. Arthur.
Oh,
and this is the days of... literally still rotary phones, or at least maybe a doot-doot-doot, but like an attached to the wall or the bed right. phone, a corded phone, and a typed cast and crew list contact sheet. Right? Like, this isn't like, oh, my numbers are in my smartphone I just hit. Yeah. So she would dial
You really had to work to drunk dial back then.
That's my point. So she would, and that his, like, it's his, he's only been there, he's only done like two episodes. And after a taping of a, you know, successful whatever episode, 2:30 in the morning, his phone rings. He's in a dead sleep. He answers, he goes, hello. And he hears, Betty White is a cunt. And the phone slams down. And so at this point, he's like, do you try to go back to sleep? Like, I got literally Satan just called and woke me up in the middle of the night. So he goes in, you know, to work the next Monday, unsure whether he should say. And luckily, apparently, by lunchtime, he overheard some other people laughing about Betty or about B calling them. Yeah. And he was like, wait, did you get a call too? Another? Oh, yeah. It happens all the time on Friday nights, late at night. You get a random call. It's usually Betty White's a cunt. And then she slams the phone down. It's fun. It's a thing she does. Like, it's just a thing she does.
That sounds like, I think, a feud. Did you watch Feud?
I wouldn't watch Feud because of Susan Sarandon. But, you know, but Susan, I can never excuse her for what she did in the 2016 election. But that's just my personal
politics. Yeah.
It was
If she only talked one voter into voting for fucking Jill Stein.
Have someone blur her face.
Yeah, I can't.
And editing and just watch it because it's so good.
I know, I'm sure it's brilliant.
It's so good. That's a fucking incredible story.
Yeah. Here's the other, I'll tell you the other B. Arthur story that he told me. That, you know, they shot on Renmar Studios, which is right there at Sunset and Vine, went sort of behind the corner.
Oh, I thought it was in Burbank.
No. It's Sunset and Vine. And it, you know, originally was Desilu Studios that Ricky Lucy, Desi Arnaz. Yeah,
they
where they did
at
all
Midnight.
That. And where they created the four-camera sitcom. But anyway, so Desi's office apparently overlooks the small parking lot. It's a very small studio. There's like four sound stages, maybe. And so, you know, obviously the cast members of the Star Show, they all have assigned spaces. And so, again, during the week, B apparently would very often come flying into the parking lot, throw her car not so accurately into her parking space, and then get out with a full rocks glass in her hand, ice clinking, and then walk in. And this is like 8:30 in the morning, apparently, on like a Monday, Tuesday.
Breakfast.
Well, whoever was the, you know, the manager of the studio or the head of the, you know, who was running it, that had that office that could oversee. So B gets a call. I need you to come in. We have to discuss something. Well, obviously, B. Arthur is not the kind of woman that really is going to be called into the principal's office and take it well anyway.
Oh,
so she goes in, you know, with her arms folded. It's like, what's this about? And the person is like, you know, B, this could be a PR problem. Like, someone could see. You could be right here on Vine and see into the parking lot. You come flying in, driving, and then getting out holding what is obviously a cocktail. Like, it's a little rocks glass with ice cubes in it, you know. This, please, you've got to help me. We're on a very popular show. There's a lot of, and she says, you know, don't worry about it, chief. And he's like, oh god, I thought she was gonna tell me to fuck off or whatever. So apparently the next day, same time, car, same squealing break through the parking lot, throws it into a parking, gets out of the car and has her liquor in a ceramic coffee mug, looks up at his window, gives him a like, hey, chief, and then walks in totally drunk, as if like, problem solved. I fixed the visual, boss.
She has a sippy cup.
So again, I do not know if those stories are true, but I need them to be. They only make us love B more.
That makes me love her more. She did not give a flying fuck.
She really didn't have to. That don't become huge stars until after 40 are always my favorite. They always are just they're grateful for it. They don't need it the same way. You know what I mean? I just love it.
They've lived a life like before they became stars, so they have like, that context to draw from.
Yeah,
yeah,
like a Jane Lynch kind of celebrity. Yeah, yeah. Like, exactly. Oh wow, you're so real.
And she had figured out how to survive as a human without being famous.
Yeah,
and had probably made peace with it. And then this thing happens, and it's like, well, now this is gravy. This is just great.
Yeah,
as opposed to someone that gets it in 22 and is like, all I care about is not losing this because I don't. Mm-hmm. Then I don't know what I would be.
Because at 40, you haven't made it, and you're just kind of at peace already.
Yeah.
And then you get it, and you're like, oh, this is like, well, good. I was happy. I was already happy.
Girl, I'm full on in my plan B.
Yeah.
This is not what I expected, and I'm like, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
My plan. Maybe it's my plan C even. Yeah. You know, being back in Phoenix. Yeah. But like, I got nothing to complain about. So that's good.
That's great. Yay.
Although I will complain about this Golden Girls clip show, if you'd like.
Oh, we're going to complain more about it. It was out of control. So we did see, it got really documentary now. Like it was so, the titles to go to commercial and back made me laugh. So like every single time that woman and welcome back to the Golden it was just like,
well, because it's Lifetime,
the Oscars,
so
1996,
you're not gonna watch a Lifetime show unless a woman tells you what the show is. It couldn't be a male voice.
I like that
too.
It was a woman, but like she was so,
of course, it was
cheesy.
ridiculous.
And then
they didn't have the real theme song. Right. Sounds alike were inexcusable.
Of these women,
another woman singing,
but it was like several women. Wasn't
it was
it like
just
two?
A real mistake.
It was like the TJF like birthday song cover of the Golden Girls.
You're right.
And then the same singer sang "Girls Just Want to Have Fun," like almost towards the end. And
at
then
the end,
when I just heard you, oh my god! Like it was out of control.
It was like a sad,
should not have happened.
A sad version of it, like kind of.
But again, that's such a network. If they executive said... thing to go, well, the show has the word girls in the title.
Yeah.
And there's a song about girls having fun. And they had so much fun on that show. Meanwhile, that is not what the song Girls Just Want to Have Fun is about, like, at all. It's about I want to stay out all night and fuck guys and leave me alone, Dad. I'm 16.
Leave me alone, Dad. I'm 16 now.
My God.
My head would have exploded if they sang Golden Girls Just Want to Have Fun. My head would not be here.
You know what?
I would have
respected it more, actually.
Yeah, would you?
I would have wanted it as my ringtone.
I mean, it would have exploded because I loved it.
It would have gone back as being so bad that then I had to love it. But as their choice, I just resent and I'm angry about it.
Oh my goodness. And then they had, and then it started cutting into like the producers, and we saw Susan Harris. And she...
From 1989.
From 1989.
Well, we all had a different celebrity doppelganger for her. Instantly. We all were like, she looks like so-and-so.
I said Goldie Hawn.
I said Meg Ryan from When Harry Met Sally.
And I said Linda Hamilton.
Right.
Like, after the first Terminator movie.
I think we're all correct.
I mean, if we combine these women, it would be Susan Harris.
But it's all three of those people on a Quaalude. Like, for sure, on a quote, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if she had been Cosby'd or what. But she was very...
Like, I created the show based off of... And what?
She's like the person that would write the least funny script you'd ever read in your life.
Yeah.
Right? She just seemed like, the most depressed.
Yeah. Like, she was writing, like,
didn't they
like
say
a procedural.
She had chronic fatigue syndrome?
Do you think that... that could affect... Like her speech?
I think it would.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally.
She should be in bed. She shouldn't be doing
anything.
She should have
read
bed clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she should have.
I read it as horrible white lady self-importance is what I
really
received.
Like, I don't have time to be doing this
just
interview.
And just like that grandeur of like, I have created some of the world's funniest television.
Like,
you know,
a,
like it just sort of felt like that to me.
Like she's an artiste.
Yeah, like I have my hair just expertly tousled to look as though I've just gotten out of bed, but I paid $450 for this look. And I'm in like a cream sweater, but it's just, do you know what I mean? It was sort of Streisand-y.
It was very lovely hair. The waves are really nice, but also they're very metal to me, like someone in like Guns N' Roses could have had that hair.
It was a disheveled look that she paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like Working Girl.
Well, yes.
Like she was an extra in the background of Pretty Woman. Like that, I think that would be a good.
It's around the same time.
Yeah.
And her office.
They shot her working.
A bedroom, right? Wasn't there a bed behind?
Because she had to lay down during
work. Oh, because of the chronic fatigue probably. Syndrome. So she would just type three words and then lie down.
Yeah. So she like pushed her bed to her.
Oh my God,
her
computer. Killing me right
her
now.
Her computer. That's yeah. That was just.
It looked like a Simon game.
Yeah.
With like the green and the yellow. Like it was the most basic.
Yeah.
But that was like
a giant fax machine with like a 2-inch by 3-inch screen that she was
typing.
That was
like a cutting edge computer back then. That was like, oh, look impressive. How small this is. Like, yeah.
It was really.
Can you imagine
great.
The font that those original Golden Girls scripts must have been written in? That like Atari 81 just computer dot matrix font. Like, yeah. B. Arthur can't read that shit.
Just all courier all the time.
So. Just like Times Roman before it was even New Roman.
Courier old.
Just Times.
Yeah, exactly. That was. And then also the Paul Junger
Paul wit. Junger bits, yeah.
He is like, he's the Tony Robbins of 90s television. He was so Mr. Good. Motivator.
Yeah.
He could take the smallest, like, the show was wildly successful after the premiere, and turn it into our show reinvented television as a genre and saved NBC. Like, it was like, dude.
When I first heard our name being called, I remember that moment. I was so excited.
He really can oversell a sound. I mean, there's a reason why the people that are behind the camera are behind cameras.
He waited 18 years for this interview.
Yeah.
Bless his heart. He's going to take advantage of it.
They made it very obvious. He was on a film set. And they're like, ladders in the background.
Yeah.
Light and equipment. They're like,
they did everything,
busy.
Everything but the one light shining into the camera, making that starburst.
Yeah.
With a light with a gel. Yeah. That would be the only way they could have been more heavy-handed with the, we're backstage at a film studio.
Oh, maybe like people walked by in like costume.
Carrying a rope.
Yeah.
Oh, like a showgirl and a nun smoking cigarettes.
Or someone carrying like a giant plane of glass. Like two workmen.
Like two people in a horse costume.
Right, a backdrop of a tunnel.
Yeah,
totally.
The horse costume comes apart and they're like,
just break
the costume
time.
Designers in the back trying to fix it.
That's amazing. There was one, I know we're bouncing around a lot, but there was sound bite where Betty White, God love her. I mean, this is America's Nana. Mm-hmm. But she got tasked with tossing to the package about how many gay storylines they'd had.
Yeah. She was so uncomfortable.
And she's literally like, and the homosexual. Remember, it was sort of like that South Carolina at the pageant that was like, and the Americas.
She said all the words wrong in that sentence.
Oh my God. And she's trying so hard not to offend. We had a lot of gay stories. Well, not a lot. Not too many, because it was good and we loved them. But there were, it was a wreck. And then they cut to the one super homophobic, swishy, gay,
the lesbian
faggot
one.
Actor. No, the art gallery guy when all the girls are in love with the sculptor.
Yeah.
And they're like, are you interested in anybody here? And he's like, I am. And then out of nowhere, just the
queen.
Faggot McFag comes out. And is just like, sus-sus-sus-sus.
I know.
And walks by. His existence was the punchline.
Yeah, yeah, just him being a person is great to laugh at.
Just, oh.
No mention of Coco. Which was like, okay, you...
They did one thing right
did one thing
in
right.
not
yeah.
mentioning Coco.
All right. Yeah, she literally said the sentence, we had a gay she said, we had a homosexuality stories. I was like, that's not a sentence.
Was no second take of anything on those sound bites.
She was uncomfortable, I think.
Rue McClanahan is setting something up, and she's like, I can't remember, but somebody said something about, and you're like, you're horrible at recollecting any of this.
Yeah.
Like, did they call you last night and ask you to come and do this?
The pixelation, her hair was confusing to me. Was that anybody else felt that way?
Whose hair?
The Rue's.
current? Well, Rue at the most on the set?
On the show. No, not on the show, but on this show. The Talking Head.
Okay.
It was like black and blonde, like kind of wavy stripes.
She had a bang situation that was kind of limp.
Yeah. Like it didn't have an intent.
As after the show, she had a fascinating thing happen to her where her head and face continued to grow into her
body.
Older age, but her eyes stayed tiny, and so they just appeared smaller and more close together as she aged. So by the time she came back for this, she's quite moon-faced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? She looks like a smiley face emoji,
I think,
basically.
She just didn't get, like, she just refused to, like, get surgery or lift or anything, which is fine.
Who knows? I don't know. God bless her. But it just was interesting. She couldn't do the accent anymore. Yeah. And she was dressed so conservatively in that black pantsuit with the white collar. And you're like, you were the slut?
And you're going to wear this sailor suit?
Right, with the big white cuffs and the...
Yeah, it was very confusing.
I'll tell you what, though. Her on that piano in that red, sparkly, she looked hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I kind of liked her explanation, or at least I found it interesting, her explanation for Blanche, basically, like how she was playing her, where she just basically like saw her as she had one great love, her husband, and he died, and then she wasn't so much into sex, she was so much into finding that other love. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I agree, but I...
No,
that's her motivation.
It is a great justification.
Yeah.
But it's also a pathology.
Yeah.
That, like, if you lost a husband, you decide, so now I'm just going to literally fuck any man at any time, and no standards, because I'm so needy.
That would be like that character's like intervention moment for being like a sex addict. Like, we know you lost your husband, but you don't need to have sex with everybody. And like, that's like where the therapy begins. It's like the husband, you know?
Just Blanche, your sex addiction
has affected
her
lives.
Hurts me in the following ways.
Here's a list of things you've slept with in my house.
Wow, that is so funny.
Sex addiction is very serious.
Yeah. And then the only Estelle Getty interview was some clip from 1992 towards the end where, like, Bea Arthur's holding her hand and she's like, oh, and also the one when she's like, oh, I'm just happy to be working.
Yeah.
That was like early. Yeah. That was like 86.
Yeah. 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 That was after the show became a hit, and she was just like, it's so great, you know, to get such success late in life. Yeah. And then there was the clip of them after they had shot the finale where she was saying everyone pretty much held it together till the end.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we all kind of
killed each other.
It is true, though. I will say, when I hadn't seen, you know, the finale in so long, and when I think of it, I think of Bea Arthur's toilet paper roll wedding dress. Like, we all had a different visual for the wedding dress.
Right.
But I had forgotten that she literally just moves out, but leaves her mother behind with...
Which is so weird.
...with roommates.
Yeah.
So she can go get the D. Just take care of my mom.
Yeah,
and then,
the mom should come.
But then when Betty...
Go start a hotel.
When Betty White says, after she is she does the long crying speech about I love you, and Betty White just goes, so is this goodbye? And there's that silence. And Betty White does the greatest line read of her career on that. It shattered me. It was so sad.
Yeah, and they only showed part of the clip where it's like they kind of like Bea Arthur like keeps coming back.
Right.
Like at one point she like comes back from the garage.
Yeah,
and I remember
that's
watching
really
that.
Funny.
And it was so funny, but it was so sweet.
I think at the very least that during that scene there should have been a moment of goodbye with Estelle. Like, you know, she says goodbye to the girls and then pulls her away.
Yeah,
and
there
says
must
bye
be.
To her mom.
There must be a scene with them where she's like,
I
Ma, you really
is.
Want to stay
Before
with
there
them?
Is.
There
I'm
is.
Sure Estelle Getty chooses, no, let me stay here. This is my home and I'll see you and I'll come live with you once you're settled, but go have your honeymoon. And...
Yeah, she groups them in like friendship. She's like, I didn't expect
also,
this friendship.
Do you want to live in a house with Leslie Nielsen? and have it just be fart jokes and pull my finger and surely you're not serious. All like I'm 90. I can't.
We all time love for that, airport. Leslie. Move on.
Yeah, I can't, Leslie.
Airplane. Oh, airport. We all loved Airport 77.
Yeah, Airport was the prequel to Airplane before they got Airport, on the plane. Yeah.
Wasn't that one about a what they were basing big plane? On, yeah. Yeah, that's right. It was
Airport
like,
movies were the big shit. Disaster movies that, yeah, they were sort of making fun of.
Yeah.
That's right.
Airplane.
All
right. Soul Plane was my favorite. Soul Plane was the best. Okay.
So the Queen of England.
The Queen of England part.
Was... allegedly was such a huge fan of the Golden Girls. Like, she had nothing else on her plate, so she was able to just tune in on Saturday nights. But whatever, that's fine. But that they got this command performance. Yeah. And they show some footage. And you said, God, why can't we get that? Because you're right. Yeah, that's what I want to see. Because they wrote an entire episode, top to bottom, where the girls go to London.
Yeah.
They, remember they were saying, oh, that let's go was, sightseeing.
We're
going
to go to London. I want to see that.
Yeah.
What reason could they pop? How do they justify that? And they did it on a stage just in front of a rhinestone curtain, like no sets.
And then the set like moved. But like they lifted costumes. Like the kitchen when they got out.
And they're breaking the fourth wall.
Talking to the queen.
So I'm like, please, someone's got to have a video of that.
What was the joke that they said to the queen?
Well, she was like, what? Ma, do you want to stay here? I know you're tired. And she's like, what? An old lady can have a lot of fun and get dressed up and go out for a night of fun in England. Like, look at that handsome lady up there in the good seats or something. She points to her.
And the crowd just crashed.
Ate it up, honey. Ate it up.
I wonder if they had guns pointed at them the entire time.
Well, you know they were like vetting that script.
Bayonets
like,
off stage. Like, yeah. Get back
they
up
those,
there.
Those like stern guards with the hats. Like...
Okay, anything else that we missed?
They do give us the Sonny and Cher costumes.
They did do that.
That was great.
Which you gotta have.
They gave us the piano. They gave us a tiny bit of Chicken Little, which is still upsetting.
Really? But they gave us like a chicken wing. Like I needed a thigh.
They needed a whole thing. And they didn't give us the tap dancing one.
Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Because,
or the one where they dance in the hospital room.
But it's the same episode. Because everyone remembers them tap dancing in the living room. When, by the way, how did those old ladies move that couch and roll up that giant area rug in order to have their fake wood floor exposed to tap? I have questions.
There's no questions.
Yeah. But
bring in
they
that
do that
piano.
Insane tap rehearsal thing. Dorothy, where she's got the solo. And boy, I didn't realize Dorothy's solo was so long. But then they go after the surgery and do the tap number
in a hospital room.
I would be the patient in the next bed, being like, "Ladies, I just had surgery. Enough with the tap shoes.
Calm your shit.
Like, this is not a private room.
It's too extra right now. Stop it.
We don't have a cabaret license in this hospital. I'm sorry." Terry Hughes left towards the end of the season, that's the series, and now he's like back for this documentary. He's like, yeah, this was like the best thing ever.
Well,
I was
because
just kinda,
he directed
like most
really
of the
episodes. Almost every episode, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Certainly
I didn't know
the first five seasons.
I didn't know he was foreign either. That was surprising to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about him.
I mean, he sounded foreign. We only heard like a few clips of him, and I was like, that's a little bit of a British accent, right?
Right.
Or Australian. Was he Australian?
Write in if you know.
Write in if you know. Okay. Anything else that the bloopers were out of control?
Well, they're just the lamest.
They were
like,
just sad.
We've
Some
all
of them
seen someone not know their next line. I don't understand.
Yeah.
There's just the one prank that we have
to
break down.
They build up to that prank, and it was just like the most sexual harassment.
It's a
thing.
Full crime.
Yeah. So they had the man of Blanche's boudoir gag on set where they put
so
in
at
the
rehearsal. Right. At the rehearsal.
Was it the rehearsal? Okay.
Right. Because remember, Sal Getty wasn't in old lady drag yet. So they're just like camera blocking. Mm-hmm. The prop department switched out the calendar with
Pictures of the crew naked, but like not completely crotch covered naked.
But wild, like one guy's wearing a saddle and is all on for it, and then has another, the one black crew member is riding him.
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of stuff that would be hashtag Me Too.
Right now,
we're shutting this
it
set
would be
down.
On a Jezebel article.
It would be a real problem.
There's a key grip out there with a story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. So, all right. I think we covered it all. We did it, guys.
Yeah. Let's do anything else we want to add. Like,
it was out of control. And I'm glad we watched it. And I'm glad it's over.
It really... The thing, you know, again, with Estelle, that whole episode about her with the old African-American gentleman that she befriends at the mm-hmm. beach, and then she realizes that he is whatever. I think it's Alzheimer's, I think, in the episode, but he's, you know, he's got senile issues. And to look back at that now, knowing that that's what ultimately, mm-hmm. that, you know, she had dementia brought on by whatever, you know, is just so heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so sad. And
yeah, I wonder how many people, how many actors have died in like a movie and then died in real life that way.
Oh my god,
that'd be crazy.
There used to be someone in my junior high told me that Saved by the Bell, where of course the guys get in a car accident, that that Zach from Saved by the Bell actually died like that in real life.
No, he's still alive.
Yeah, no, he's on Nobody's right now.
Yeah,
no, this is in junior high. They're like, in
junior high. Again, not enough internet to be able to. You couldn't know anything. That's
so
sure.
much easier to lie back then. Oh, yeah. Dumb about stuff.
It. Yeah. Tell me about I used to it. Lie all the time to people about super shit.
Well, you know, what about the wedding? Dorothy's wedding scene in the finale. They cut to something that horrified me so much. They cut to a shot of Blanche and Rose as the bridesmaids. And they're standing directly in front of these two massive candelabras that have like 20 lit candles, actual 2-inch flame candles near Betty White's head. Now, this is a woman who's got 4 hairs on her head to begin with, and they just back tease it and spray it into a bubble. And with the amount of spray involved in that, you're going to put not one open flame, but 15?
1,500 flames behind you.
That
was out of control.
And talk about cheating death.
Yeah.
The 80s.
They should have all died in that church.
That is remarkable. I want to send a shout out to the actress who played young Dorothy in all the flashbacks.
Yes.
I feel like she is the unsung hero of the Golden Girls. If you are a fan, she is so great.
So good.
And then the actress that plays Dorothy. Okay, who does she play? Dorothy's. The cousins that come from Italy, it's Sophia's. Remember when they think that Dorothy got switched at the hospital?
Frida Claxton.
Yeah.
She also plays Frida Claxton. Yes.
She also plays Frida.
It is so crazy that within like a 3 or 4 year window, NBC allowed that actress to come back again playing another. I'm glad they did because she's also dynamite. Great. But it's, you know, because we get in this clip show, we talk about Stan. Right. And Miles.
Well, they killed Frida Claxton, so maybe that's like her reincarnation of.
And by the way, character. That's one of my favorite episodes.
The Frida Claxton, where it's so good.
Where Betty White literally thinks she killed a woman, by standing up for herself. that's a really good one.
That was great. All right, so I think we did it, guys. Yay!
This was fun.
Thank you so much for being here. You're such a delight to have.
I know we had a lot of criticisms, and I just want to, in case anyone involved in this clip show was involved, we love the show.
We love
We're
the
glad
show.
You this, made it.
This was a big complaint session.
It was a product of 2001. It's not your fault.
But listen, most of our episodes that we did became complaint sessions. Yeah. Either. It's just the nature of the podcast.
By the way, can I ask one other question?
Yeah.
Do we have time?
Yeah. Sure.
I need, and maybe this is online somewhere, I need a goddamn blueprint of that house that they live in.
They did.
Because every shot outside.
It doesn't make sense.
No, the garage is here and then the front door, but then that doesn't track with where the front door
is
on
the
set. Off the kitchen.
Yeah.
And
then there's the lanai. None of it tracks for me. I've never been able to wrap my head around it.
There is a 3D attempt online that you can take a walkthrough of what the house could have been and should have been, or what it was, and then what the real house was.
Well, the real house is in, you know, Los Angeles. You can go drive by the real house. Yeah, I've gone to it. Yeah. And it just doesn't track.
Yeah. There's also this like really grand fireplace area that's like kind of right off the entrance, and they never go there. And
it's
I'm like, you should have that. You should have some couches and some chairs set up. That should be like the focal point of your house. Yeah, that's just
they just
and you know all. It's so funny. Just like all those times, the four of them are sitting at that kitchen table on just one side of the table with a big 50% of the table completely unused.
And someone just sits on the stool.
It's so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous.
Awesome. It's just
it's
so
great.
Awesome. I also, whatever that wardrobe department. It's easy to make fun of what B. Arthur wore for being, you know, whatever odd and stuff. But their nightgowns are so great. The way Rue McClanahan had 50 of those satiny sort of dressing gowns. Sometimes it was like a kimono. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Betty White had the prissy velour with the lace around the collar. Like, they really did an amazing job costuming
Kudos
that show.
Kudos to the costumes. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, I wish they had like a line of those that they had sold.
There's probably some collection that travels from museum to museum of Golden Girls outfits.
I would go.
That's interesting. I wonder. Yeah.
So this comes out on May 9th. I decided just now because I do the editing. And so,
well, great. I want to tell you, I got lit at Cinco de Mayo.
I hope everyone had a lit Cinco de Mayo. Tony, where can people find you online and in person?
Not in person because I never leave my house. Okay. But
I mean,
but
like no. shows wise.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Facebook, just Facebook, Tony Tripoli,
okay.
TRIPOLI. Super easy to find. My Facebook is problematic and hate filled, and I think hilarious. So please come and enjoy.
As everyone's
but
is.
But don't bother sending me a negative comment because I will just remove it and then block you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you should. Like
which
you
is should. Also what I do in real life. Yeah. So that's my policy. I'm 48 years old.
I delete real people and I block them.
Oh, yeah.
No
yeah.
time.
No yeah, reason no to time. Suffer fools.
Yeah.
Right?
And Genevieve, where are you going to be after May 9th and where can people find you online?
All right. Well, I forgot to pull up my show calendar, so I'm just going to tell people where to find.
I can do mine if you want so while you look for yours.
No, I'll just say where people can find me online because I'll advertise it. I'm at Genevieve Rice pretty much everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's great. Come find me.
Come find Genevieve. and I'm at Anthony DeSamito on Twitter and Instagram. May 9th, the day this comes out, I'm going to be at the Fault Line doing Crack 'Em Up. It's a comedy show at this gay bar that used to be like out of control, apparently, back in the day. But they've calmed down a little bit.
You just keep telling yourself that.
Yeah? Oh, is it still out of control?
It is. Honey, you better wear three pair of underwear and your best sling. Because it's going to be, you better show up lubricated because it is, yes.
I'm always pre-lubed.
Okay, God bless you.
From the moment I wake up, I start lubing.
I love the young people today. They're ready for it.
Be prepared, just like the Boy Scout said.
Yeah.
You stay ready. You don't need get ready.
My bidet is just lube that,
oh God,
that,
yeah.
that pushes out.
I like that
smart. I'm impressed you have a bidet.
A lube day.
Yeah.
A lube day. I'm going to be at Flappers at 8 o'clock hosting a show called Amazing Friends. Daniel Franzese's Amazing Friends. So that's going to be fun. Check it out because Daniel Franzese is great. And along with our own individual Twitter as a podcast, also as a Twitter, it's at Thank You For Being A Podcast, but as an acronym, at TYFBAP. Also, it spells out TIFBAP, also at TIFBAP on Instagram. Our next episode is, I don't know when we're going to do it. Maybe
whenever we get the footage from Golden Girls on Ice.
From Golden Girls on Ice Golden Girls, the Queen's performance.
Uh-huh.
We'll do something fun. Maybe we'll do
just ye old Golden Girls.
Ye old Golden Girls.
Yeah.
We might do the Star Wars scene. Ooh. with from the Star Wars holiday special where B. Arthur sings at the
Gorgeous.
Bar.
Have you ever seen the Golden Girls in other countries?
No.
There were some countries that recast and did, but most countries just played it dubbed in their language, and it is truly hilarious to watch an episode that you know in Italian or Swedish or whatever. So I'm sure those can be found on
YouTube.
Maybe
we can find those too.
Yeah.
It's a good way to learn another language.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you everyone for listening. Have a beautiful day and or night. Goodbye.
Bye.
Gonna stuff a chicken. Gonna stuff the chicken. Like my mama taught me. Like my mama taught me. Gonna take the chicken. Mississippi.